Good morning and good afternoon to everyone. Thank you for joining us. Welcome to today's presentation, From Barriers to Solutions: Making Progress and Looking Ahead to Solutions for Internationally Educated Nurses and Physicians. Before we begin our presentation today, we would like to begin with an acknowledgement that N4 is hosted at CHEO, which is located in Ottawa, Ontario. Ottawa is built on unceded Algonquin Anishinaabe territory. The peoples of the Algonquin Anishinaabe Nation have lived on this territory for millennia, and we honor them and this land. Their culture and presence have nurtured and continue to nurture this land. We also honor all First Nations, Inuit, and Métis peoples and their valuable past and present contributions to this land. My name is Mariah Madoc. I am N4's team lead of knowledge development and mobilization. I will be hosting and moderating today's presentation. I will be doing this along with my colleague and co-host, Sahar Zoni, N4's manager of operations, planning, and performance. And I am now pleased to introduce you to today's presenters. Presenters, I'm going to ask that you turn your video on as I introduce you. Our first speaker today is Joyce Christiansen. Joyce is a registered nurse with over 40 years, a 40-year career that is included nursing in urban, rural, and remote areas in four provinces. She has been involved in clinical practice, education, and research. She has a master's in business administration and has spent most of her career in health services management. She is currently the executive director of the Association of Regulated Nurses of Manitoba, a member of the board of the Holy Family Home, chair of the board for the Manitoba Association of Community Homes for the Elderly, and also co-chair of N4's IEN Community of Practice Working Group. Joyce is an advocate for the profession of nursing and for the use of skills of internationally educated health professionals in the Canadian healthcare system. Our next presenter, unfortunately, is unable to join us today, and that is Dr. Edward Cruz, assistant professor in the Faculty of Nursing at the University of Windsor. Edward is also the co-chair of N4's Internationally Educated Nurse COP Working Group. And our next presenter today is Andrea Strachan. Andrea is a principal consultant at RDocs Writers and Consultants and chair of N4's Community of Practice ITP's Working Group. Formerly Senior Director of Program Design at Touchstone Institute, she specializes in competency-based assessment and training for internationally educated health professionals in Canada. With a strong background in language curriculum and assessment, Andrea has expanded her practice to include collaboration with educational institutions, professional associations, regulatory bodies, and government to improve the integration of internationally trained professionals. At Touchstone, she expanded access to specific purpose language assessments for internationally educated nurses, developed simulated training for newcomers in healthcare, and implemented practice-ready competency assessments for internationally trained family physicians. Now, as a consultant, Andrea draws on her extensive experience in designing and implementing education and evaluation tools aligned with professional competencies to help organizations adopt best practices and competency profiles, adult education, assessment, and policy development. Thanks so much for being here, Andrea. Our presenters today do not have any conflicts of interest to disclose. And today's session is being recorded and will be uploaded to our N4 platform. We will share this with you as soon as it becomes available. Should there be any technical issues during this presentation, we will inform you with details for an alternate makeup session. And before we begin today's event, I would like to take a moment to tell you how you can participate today. Throughout today's session, we invite you to write your questions in the Q&A window. And we know that sometimes many of you might have the same question or be interested in a particular response. Today, you have the option of upvoting a question. Please upvote questions you are interested in hearing the answer to, and we will prioritize those questions when we ask them to the speakers. With that said, we're going to get started with today's presentation, which will provide an update on the status of the 2023 Internationally Trained Physicians and Internationally Educated Nurses Community of Practice Working Group recommendations and a synopsis of the 2025 focus as we move towards advancing the optimal employment of internationally educated health professionals in Canada. And to set the stage for this presentation, we'd like to acknowledge Canada's health human resource crisis. Immigrants play a critical role in addressing this issue. In fact, immigrants account for approximately 37% of Canada's healthcare workforce, according to Statistics Canada data. However, despite their significant presence, 47% of internationally educated health professionals are either unemployed or underemployed. The impact of this issue extends beyond employment disparities. Across Canada, we face a critical shortage of family physicians, with half of Canadians lacking access to a family doctor or being able to see them within a reasonable time frame, such as within a week. With such a large proportion of healthcare professionals being underutilized, we are potentially missing an opportunity to address this pressing shortage and improve healthcare access for all Canadians. To further illustrate this point, the 2021 census data revealed that there are approximately 61,000 internationally educated nurses who are not working as registered nurses or licensed practical nurses in Canada. At the same time, in October 2024, Canada had 34,500 RN, registered nurse and licensed practical nurse vacancies. And just a caveat with this data that we like to include is that this includes the population from the last 10 years. Therefore, among the 61,000, there are likely registered nurses and licensed practical nurses who have given up on the process or are employed within other sectors. And the 2021 census reveals that 32,000 internationally trained physicians are not working as physicians in Canada. This is a significant loss of skilled professionals in an already stretched healthcare system. At the same time, the Canadian Medical Association has set a target of 7,500 net new physicians within the next 5 years and 15,000 within 10 years. Of those who are internationally trained as physicians and nurses, we can see here that less than half are working in their trained profession. Our goal of sharing this data with you is to show the mismatch between available skilled professionals and vacant positions and demonstrate the missed opportunity to address the urgent shortage of healthcare workers. In 2022, IRCC expanded NFOR's mandate to address the barriers to licensure and optimal employment faced by internationally educated health professionals. After an extensive stakeholder engagement, NFOR produced a report called A Missing Part of Me, a Pan-Canadian Report on Licensure of Internationally Educated Health Professionals, an overview of this current state. To drive system-level change, NFOR leveraged its community of practice model to form a working group of key decision-makers along the IEN and ITP pathways to licensure. NFOR facilitated 6 monthly meetings to support the formation of key recommendations for system change and summarized this work in 2023 reports, welcoming IENs into the Canadian healthcare sector, recommendations for change, and part of the solution, recommendations for welcoming internationally trained physicians into the healthcare system. Both of these reports were informed by internationally trained physicians and internationally educated nurses. And the IEN and the ITP working group chose to continue quarterly meetings to support continued intersectoral collaboration in addition to providing strategic guidance to NFOR's work. And today we will be launching progress reports that provide an update on these recommendation reports. And I'm now going to hand it over to my colleague Sahar, who is going to explain some of the work that NFOR has done since those 2023 reports launched.
Thanks, Mariah. And since we had a lot of work done and we developed a lot of resources and tools that align with the recommendation, the initial recommendation report in 2023, we were very keen to kind of put all these resources and tools and which was one actually of the recommendation that came up in both reports around having a central hub where all the information would be available for IHPs. So we developed what we call the N4 IHP Resource Hub. So if you visit the N4 website, you'll find that there is a vertical reflecting the hub. And in that hub, we were very keen to kind of, curate all the material that was out there that would be useful, provide the right information for our IHPs, and also add all the tools and the resources that we have been able to develop in collaboration with our partners, the organizations that were working and are still working, of course, on the foreign credential and licensing of internationally degreed healthcare professionals, and those organizations also who are supporting their employment. Maybe I'll go to the next one. So the curated material came from our partners, as I mentioned, and we were keen to kind of reflect on the financial supports that are available for IHPs, employment opportunities for them to either become employed or be oriented to who are the employers that are currently open to employing IHPs, also navigation supports. And there were lots of foreign, federal, provincial, and territorial initiatives that were happening and are still happening very quickly to ensure that IHPs get integrated into our healthcare system. Bridging programs are very helpful for them to kind of bridge the gaps that might be there in their education or their training. Settlement services, again, vary from province to province, and again, according to the funders. So again, adding those resources for them was kind of, I think, an asset. Also, mentorship programs and reflecting on all the work that many of the IHP-led organizations and groups are having, to support them in their journey. So all those curated material are available on the hub, and thanks to the N4 team, we were able to kind of provide continuous upgrading and updating and making sure that the information is accurate. So every 3 months and every 6 months, we will be able to visit those resources and make sure that they are up to date. And again, through our meetings with the ITPNI and working groups and many of the consultations we have with the lived experience, those resources do get updated regularly. Go to the next one. The pathway was kind of laying out the pathways for them to become licensed and making sure that all the milestones are reflected in a visual, easy-to-follow pathway was something that we were very keen on developing at N4 from the beginning of the work. We have like the pathway for IEMs to become licensed, and we were able to also line out the pathways, the 5 pathways actually, for an ITP to become licensed in Canada, from being taking residency to the PER program, to the PRA program, to alternative program, alternative pathway through the College of Family Physicians. Those pathways are lined out, and they are linked actually to the actual websites of those who are involved. The different steps, the milestones are linked to the different organizations that are responsible for that step. And by this, we were keen to kind of make sure that the information again gets updated through those websites, but also N4 as a team, we go in and we update those pathways on a quarterly basis to make sure that the information stays updated and informs them properly. Go to the next one. Knowing that the employer has a big role in their journey of IHPs, we work closely with a number of employers across Canada. And we were able to kind of, get their input and also the input of the lived experience. And we were able to create an employer toolkit and a checklist, which would help any employer, varying from those providing tertiary care, hospitals, community health services, long-term care, to actually use the employer, that toolkit to kind of provide and prepare themselves as an organization to hire IHPs to provide them with all the onboarding, opportunities, proper onboarding opportunities for them, and also to help them integrate them into their own organization and the systems that are available in their organization, and to retain the IHP. So recently, we just updated the employer toolkit. And as always, all the resources that we have are bilingual. So you will find the employer toolkit and checklist in both English and French. Go to the next one. We heard a lot about, how the IHPs, they struggled maybe during their interviews and during their reach out to organizations for employment opportunities. While they do have all the clinical, understanding and the clinical skills, they're lacking those soft skills, which is really, the communication, interpersonal communication skills, or a good understanding of the healthcare system in Canada, understanding our Indigenous people's health. So this is where we partnered with St. Paul University here in Ottawa to develop a program that was delivered actually over the last 3 years to more than 500 IHPs, and to help them kind of understand and get all those skills. Those 500 candidates, we followed up with them with a pre and a post survey. And we were very happy to hear that, the online program helped them in kind of, getting oriented to the healthcare system, being able to integrate better, and also being, able to get into their healthcare system much, much better. This program, we unfortunately, because of lack of funding, we're not going to be able to provide it to anymore. But we had a long waiting list of more than 50 candidates who were looking forward for us to kind of provide that program in the future. The next one. And over to Joyce.
You're on mute, Joyce.
Yes, it works better if I turn my microphone on. In today's webinar, we're sharing findings on the progress reports that look at the recommendations made in 2023 for ITPs and IENs and determine what a path forward could look like to promote optimal employment. Copies of the progress reports will be available following the webinar. So when we look at the recommendations, the 2023 IEN report made 22 recommendations for system change. Since then, 6 have been implemented and 2 are no longer relevant due to other system changes. The ITP report made 28 recommendations for system change and 12 have been actioned. So there has been progress. Some of the improvements for the internationally educated nurses, the regulators have updated their guidance and policies around language proficiency tests and the collection of documentation. The credential recognition providers have streamlined much of their process, resulting in more rapid licensing of IENs. But we do know that it continues to vary across provinces.
As Joyce mentioned, members of the internationally trained physician and for community of practice, as well as their partners and collaborators, have worked to implement several recommendations and continue to work on additional recommendations made in the 2023 report. Some of the changes observed to date include a pan-Canadian data strategy that has been launched to understand labor market gaps. And earlier we saw some of the data that that can be gleaned from some of these achievements. Also, PRA programs have been expanded to include more provinces, Ontario and New Brunswick. And as we speak, there are other provinces looking to implement practice-ready assessments as well. Additionally, transparency regarding the cut scores of the Medical Council of Canada, or MCC, qualifying examination 1, as applied by selection committees to the NAC PRA, and also to residency programs, has been increased. So there's greater transparency, and there's also feedback that's now provided to unsuccessful NAC OSCE test takers. It's probably also worth mentioning that these changes continue to be activated, and several of the PRA programs have updated their requirements over the last couple of years. The N4 Community of Practice for Internationally Trained Physicians applauds the organizations involved in all of these changes, also groups and individuals who have been instrumental in making these changes to improve the internationally trained physician pathway.
So now we're going to look at some of the 2025 calls to action for IENs. First of all, increasing the pathways for IENs to practice. We want to see nurse regulators working to harmonize licensure requirements and make available more pathways. We believe that there's a need for a pan-Canadian nursing license that allows nurses to practice across all provinces and territories without needing to reapply. We want to see further movement in license recognition from approved jurisdictions. Some of this is happening with regard to assessing education and standards, but we'd also like to see recognizing existing licenses from jurisdictions with comparable standards. We'd like to adapt the temporary licensure class to include IENs, allowing them to work while completing any remaining requirements. We hope to see mandatory accreditation for bridging programs, because we want consistent high quality standards. And we hope that the regulators will pause the expiry date of a language test once the licensure application is in process. These changes would streamline access, reduce barriers, and better integrate qualified IENs into our healthcare workforce. We'd also like IRCC to make changes, utilizing the information collected about newcomers before and at arrival to increase support for IENs so they understand what steps and requirements in the licensure can be completed pre-arrival, and also so that there are referral pathways to IEN navigational support. Newcomers struggle to find their way to health careers, and there really isn't a need for that. We'd like to see the information that's collected used. Next slide, please. We'd like to see provincial governments work with regulators and partners to do several things. First of all, adopt as-of-right rules in provincial legislation. This means ensuring that once an IEN is licensed in one province, they can practice in any other province without having to requalify. It's about recognizing qualifications consistently across Canada, removing unnecessary barriers to mobility. We want to see each province establish one-to-one IEN navigational supports. We want dedicated staff or programs to guide the IENs through the complex licensing, employment, and settlement process. We know that this kind of support can make the difference between success and stagnation. We want to see each province expand and adapt supervised clinical practice programs so that IENs have access to them in every province and across the healthcare settings. These programs are vital for ensuring that IENs gain the Canadian clinical experience often required for licensure. These need to be flexible and available, so no matter where an IEN lives or works, they have access. And then the last part of what we want to see from provincial governments is need-based financial support. The financial barriers for licensing exams, bridging programs, childcare, living expenses during training. All of these supports aren't handouts, but they are investments in a stronger, more resilient healthcare system. Together, these four actions represent a coordinated, compassionate, and practical approach. We recognize that the majority of nurses in Canada are employed through employers, so we want to see employers actively engaged in the recruitment of IENs in this country by developing mechanisms to identify and onboard these nurses. Many IENs are already working in our health system, but not as nurses. They're employed in support roles like personal support workers, care aides, administrative or dietary staff, despite their having the nursing education and experience from abroad. We'd like to see employers develop proactive strategies to identify these individuals within their workforce and work with them to get them in to healthcare roles, set them on a pathway to licensure. This includes access to bridging programs and clinical placements, mentorship and professional development opportunities, and internal policies that recognize their potential and provide flexible work arrangements to support their education. When IENs see a clear pathway to licensure, they're more likely to stay in the system and contribute meaningfully. And now I'll pass it over to Andrea.
Thank you, Joyce. We heard earlier of some observed changes in the pathway for internationally trained physicians already enacted, and here we outline some of the calls to action that continue to be worked on. We'll start with language assessment, a critical barrier faced by all internationally trained health professionals for whom English is an additional language is the language testing requirement. While language proficiency is essential for patient safety and effective communication, language testing can get in the way. Sometimes it's fragmented, sometimes it's inefficient. So aligning language requirements across the system is a really helpful strategy. The call for action is to better align these language proficiency testing requirements and also some of the exemptions or alternative ways of assessing language across the licensure pathway. So from immigration to professional licensure, which may include education. So we're talking about immigration, education, and licensure testing. Right now, an internationally trained physician may need to take several different language exams over the course of their immigration and settlement process, as tests for immigration, education, and licensure can differ. This duplication adds cost delays and can create a lot of frustration. It must be noted, however, that changes in this area are being made actively. Within the last year, we've seen some, and we continue to work on those. But I think Joyce also mentioned this for IENs, the issue of language validity, period. So really important to recognize that once a language test result is utilized for a particular requirement, that the language that the 2-year validity period is not enacted after the point of submitting those test results. If also additionally, if someone has lived, studied, and worked in Canada for years, it may be reasonable to question whether they need to do another test, given that they've already taken a test earlier and the two-year period has passed. So this whole issue of the two-year test validity period and thinking about when that's enacted and when that's reactivated is a really important thing to continue to address. And we know that right now many organizations are working on that. All of the items that we talk about require collaboration across a number of different stakeholders. In the case of language assessment, we have Immigration, Refugees, and Citizenship Canada with their language proficiency immigration policies. We have medical regulatory authorities across the provinces. We have the Federation of Medical Regulatory Authorities of Canada at the Canadian level, and also colleges and universities across Canada. So a unified evidence-based approach across all of these players could significantly reduce and streamline, reduce barriers by streamlining some of the standards. So efficient language assessment is definitely not about lowering the bar or changing the requirements for language proficiency. We recognize how important communication is in the healthcare professions, but really to streamline and consider the evidence of when someone is proficient in language doesn't always require a language test. Now, another way to streamline and make more efficient the path for internationally trained physicians is the recognition of licenses from approved jurisdictions. Many internationally trained physicians come from countries where their medical education is substantially equivalent and standards of practice are in parity with Canadian ones. The formal recognition of medical licenses from these jurisdictions, and also from the recognition of equivalent training and standards speeds up the process for those who come from these particular jurisdictions and allows medical regulatory authorities to have more time to expeditiously review and work with applicants from other jurisdictions. So this isn't about, again, lowering standards. It's about identifying and approving jurisdictions with proven equivalency. Recognition of this kind happens after rigorous comparison of education, clinical experience, and assessment processes. And in fact, we've seen some policies at the provincial level and at the national level change in regards to this. And this does definitely support our urgent needs in the physician workforce. Again, to make this happen, collaboration across the key stakeholders, such as the Royal College of Physicians and Surgeons of Canada and the College of Family Physicians of Canada, who set certification standards, and also from the provincial medical regulatory authorities who grant provincial licenses. This is the group that works collaboratively to create some changes in this area. We know that some changes have happened and other changes continue to happen. So off to currency of practice. Now, those of you in attendance here, Mariah, I'm at the next slide, please. Thank you. Currency of practice. One of the most pressing challenges faced by internationally trained health professionals, and certainly by internationally trained professionals, is maintaining currency of practice. This means that your practice needs to be current as of a particular period of time at the time of licensure. This is common in regulation, whether you're out of practice because of personal reasons or if you're out of practice because of immigration. It is critical not just for professional growth, but also for patient safety and quality care to make sure that we have currency of practice requirements. However, what opportunities can we create? What paid opportunities can we create across the provinces to help internationally trained physicians maintain their currency of practice once they're immigrated and before they're licensed? Could this include structure roles in the healthcare setting where ITPs can gain relevant supervised experience while still earning a living? This is a recommendation of our working group for internationally trained physicians. These positions could be recognized by medical regulatory authorities and tied to formal pathways towards licensure. Paid opportunities not only reduce financial barriers, but also help internationally trained physicians stay engaged in their field and ready to enter the workforce when licensure is obtained. Reforming the currency of practice requirements based on research is the recommendation at hand. We need to reform the currency of practice requirements themselves, grounded in current research and best practice. These can be assessed to reflect the realities of modern medical practice, and some standards may in fact be outdated or overly rigid, making it harder for internationally trained professionals to meet them, even though their skills may be highly relevant. Revisions of some of these requirements can improve access of ITPs to an interim position that keeps them in, includes them in the system, keeps them current, and prepares them for full licensure. These reforms will require collaboration among several key groups, including ministries of health, the medical regulatory authorities, the Federation of Medical Regulatory Authorities of Canada, faculties of medicine, and others. Now, it's also important to mention that there are some improvements in this area already that we see happening. So we continue to work on this. It's a really important area to spend our efforts. Now, mid-career internationally trained physicians are certainly an untapped resource in Canada's healthcare system. We saw the high percentage of internationally trained professionals currently not working in Canada. The recommendation made in this area is to review and streamline licensing avenues specifically designed for mid-career internationally trained professionals already living in Canada. These professionals have years of hands-on experience in diverse health settings. They're highly skilled and they can offer a hand in a time of crisis. However, they face obstacles in gaining Canadian licensure and have faced obstacles in gaining Canadian licensure. So they need the same, they do require some opportunities. Mid-career ITPs having these opportunities would not require the same level of supervision or additional education as newer graduates. What they really require at this point is a pathway that acknowledges their years of practice, allowing them to gain licensure faster. So tailoring some of these licenses processes based on experience is another important recommendation. N4's internationally trained physician community of practice envisions a more flexible licensing process for mid-career internationally trained professionals, focusing on assessing the depth of their practical experience rather than focusing on formal qualifications. Here are some examples of what is envisioned: streamlined assessments or alternative evaluation methods, a focus on competency rather than years of schooling, and targeted bridging programs that recognize the experience of mid-career internationally trained professionals in Canada while providing the Canadian context needed for them to practice effectively. Again, key partners are involved in these decisions: the Royal College of Physicians and Surgeons of Canada for specialists, the College of Family Physicians of Canada for family physicians, provincial medical regulatory authorities, ministries of health, and faculties of medicine. This is an area that, if developed, could certainly bring into practice a lot of mid-career internationally trained professionals who haven't to date been able to achieve licensure. Now let's talk about practice-ready assessments. As we continue to integrate internationally trained physicians into the Canadian healthcare system, practice-ready assessment programs have been a critical tool. They have been around for 10 years, and recently we see their expansion, which is very good news. This helps us meet a growing demand from the internationally trained physician community. And we recommend exploring ways to expand and strengthen these programs to better support general practitioners or family physicians, but also more programs for specialists. To do this, we know that a key challenge for practice-ready assessment programs is the availability of qualified assessors. So exploring strategies to increase the supply of assessors who can effectively evaluate internationally trained physicians is critical. We know that the Medical Council of Canada is currently working on initiatives to support this issue, so we're really pleased to hear that. And we also need to include training of more physicians to serve as assessors, also develop mentoring programs and collaborating with professional organizations to continue to build that pool of available experts. One of the things that we also recognize is that assessors need the resources and the remuneration in order to be able to do their work. So receiving financial compensation for that effort is really important and something we're advocating and working for, and our partners on the community of practice also working on this issue. Allocating additional resources to remunerate assessors fairly for their time and expertise is essential. This ensuring that assessors are financially supported will also encourage other physicians to participate, ultimately expanding the capacity of PRA programs. Currently, PRA programs focus largely on family medicine, and there is a growing need to include a wider range of specialties and subspecialties. So we call for an expansion of the PRA programs to assess physicians in areas such as surgery, internal medicine, psychiatry, and others essential to address shortages in these specialized fields. The Medical Council of Canada scope of standards for practice-ready assessments does include some specialists, and we'd like to see that expanded to include others. Again, we recognize there are a number of interest groups in this area, including the Medical Council of Canada, who have developed the framework for practice-ready assessment programs, the Employment Services and Development Canada, who can offer some funding for these initiatives, as well as Health Canada, also Ministries of Health provincially, the Canadian Medical Association, the Association of Faculties of Medicine of Canada, and the Royal College of Family Physicians, Touchstone Institute, who runs a prior practice ready assessment program in Ontario, and also AIMGA, who works with international medical graduates and can work on some advocacy and referrals of physicians into PRA programs. Now, one of the aspects of both residency and practice-ready assessment is the return of service requirement. This has been identified by the N4 community of practice for internationally trained physicians as an area to also work on. Specifically, we're calling for the removal of a mandatory return of service agreement. It requires physicians to work in specific areas for a set period of time in exchange for the support that they've received during their assessments. And these agreements often create unnecessary barriers for internationally trained physicians as they limit their ability to choose where they practice based on their professional goals. So removing these mandatory return of service requirements could provide internationally trained physicians with greater flexibility to practice in areas they most feel passionate about, and could reduce that feeling of uncertainty and perhaps discomfort that they may have in being limited to a particular area. If we expand voluntary programs and create greater incentives, we could replace mandatory agreements with voluntary programs and incentives to support internationally trained physicians and Canadian medical graduates alike. Voluntary incentives could include financial support for internationally trained physicians who choose to practice in underserved areas, continuing education programs, relocation assistant, and other flexible career development opportunities. This approach ensures that physicians are motivated by choice and career satisfaction rather than contractual obligations. And this would in turn support retention of physicians in all of the areas in the different provinces and across Canada where we're seeking additional physicians. Provincial ministries of health will be key to making this shift as they manage the distribution of healthcare workers across regions. And by aligning incentives and ensuring that both ITPs and internationally trained physicians and Canadian medical graduates have equal access to support underserviced areas. By removing mandatory return of service agreements and expanding voluntary programs, a more attractive, flexible, and fair system is created for internationally trained physicians, potentially increasing the retention and satisfaction of physicians while meeting the healthcare needs of underserved areas across Canada. Now, we also saw in the IEN calls a call for continuing and enhanced bridging programs. to help internationally trained physicians transition into the Canadian healthcare system, it would be really effective to introduce clinical bridging programs. These programs would specifically address gaps in clinical training, such as missed rotations, incomplete residencies, or issues around currency of practice, ensuring that internationally trained physicians are fully prepared for Canadian practice. Clinical bridging programs should target specific gaps that ITPs face. And these programs would help internationally trained physicians build the required skills and experience to meet A, the requirements for existing programs, and B, to meet Canadian standards overall. The currency of practice, as we mentioned earlier, is often a key issue for internationally trained physicians who have been out of the medical system for some time, and clinical bridging programs could include clinical placements and supervised practice to refresh their knowledge and skills, ensuring they meet the requirements for licensure. Developing these programs requires, again, collaboration among a number of interest-holding stakeholders, medical regulatory authorities to ensure programs that meet licensing requirements, faculties of medicine to provide the curriculum and the educational support, and healthcare employers to offer placements and work experience in clinical settings. Bridging programs should be flexible, offering part-time and full-time options and accessible across Canada, ensuring that internationally trained professionals in every region can participate. Finally, a note about residency positions. Residency is another route to licensure, currently a route to licensure for internationally trained physicians. And access to residency is a barrier for a lot of internationally trained physicians and international medical graduates entering practice in Canada. We've seen a lot of changes in this area this year, certainly. But international medical graduates have called for targeted reforms to create a fairer, more inclusive residency system. And the N4 report includes several recommendations in this area. This includes a recommendation to open second iteration residency spots to IMGs. We've seen some of this already happening, which is fantastic. Expanding specialty residency spots, improving transparency in the selection of who is eligible or who can be successful to a residency program. Reduction of interview biases, so some introduction of standardized interviews and clear information, again, transparency of what is evaluated during these interviews. And an assessment that ensures fairness to all candidates based on merit. Again, the key stakeholders involved in this would include the Faculties of Medicine, the Association of Faculties of Medicine of Canada, and we know that the offices of fairness commissioners across the country have also advocated for this. So we celebrate changes that have been made already in terms of residency, and we call for continued attention to how international medical graduates and internationally trained physicians can have access to some of these positions. There is a lot of work to be done. There's not a lot of work that has been accomplished. And I'll pass it on to our partners at N4 to talk about next steps for the communities of practice and for N4 as a entity.
Thanks, Andrea. And I would like to thank Andrea and going through, thoroughly going through the progress report, and wish them all the best. I think it's very important for this work. Continue, and although N4 continue to support the excellent work of the ITP and IEN working groups, but we are West organization, the World Education Services, have agreed to continue to support those working groups through their work, and we will continue to kind of wish them all the best and hope, the work that has been done over the last 3 years and maybe even over the last 6 years continues, because it's very important work And I see it as a promise for our internationally educated healthcare professionals to be part of our healthcare system in Canada and start to contribute to our country. And for those who are wondering what's going to happen to our resources, I would just like to thank all our stakeholders who have kind of, stepped in and made sure to kind of make space for our resources to live on their website. So we've been in our, journey to wind down Infor. We've been keen on making sure that all the resources that are on our website to date are up to date. So if you're checking our website, all the resources that you are using or you're, asking others to use, they are up to date thanks to the N4 team till end of May. But moving forward, after that, we're not going to be able to update them. They are going to be available. Our website is going to be up thanks to CHEO, our host organization, till the end of this year. But for the Resource Hub, for example, the WES again is going to be hosting all the content of the IHP Resource Hub, and they're going to maintain it so it stays updated. Also, OCASI have kindly agreed to have all our webinars. We know that our webinars form like an educational resource for many. So our webinars are going to be available through our N4 YouTube channel. And currently, we're also working on making sure that, organizations, all the umbrella organizations and Health Workforce Canada, for example, Healthcare Excellence, they have all the resources that they need and can be incorporated into their libraries. We will make an announcement and make sure to send a mass email to all our network and also have that information on our website and social media where, we kind of provide a comprehensive summary of where our resources will be. And again, huge thanks to all our partners and stakeholders and our committees that we've worked with over the last 6 years. And thank you very much. Thanks.
Great. Thank you so much for that, Sahar. And the progress reports, which we're sharing through this webinar today, are now live on our website as well. That's newcomernavigation.ca. We have a few minutes. I think we can get through at least a couple of questions. And so I'm going to hop right into the questions. And there is a question here that touches on regulators and equity in the countries that they're listing for expedited licensure. And so we don't have a regulator on the panel today to comment on this, but I would like to just open this up more broadly and make it a question about equity and representation. And so from your perspective, Joyce and Andrea, how can the broader system ensure that licensure pathways are fair, transparent, and inclusive of internationally educated nurses and internationally trained physicians from diverse backgrounds?
Well, I'll start. I think one of the pieces and the question specifically talked about the regulator in Manitoba, and as I'm a Manitoba resident and a member of that college, I can talk a little bit about that. That was their first go-round at looking at practice, so that was an initial go-round. There will be more coming, but I think one of the big challenges is understanding by everyone involved that there are multiple ways to learn and become a health professional. And the regulators do have an obligation to maintain standards, but that doesn't mean that it always needs to be done the way it has been done. And I think we've seen significant progress over the last 2 or 3 years. Within nursing, there are, I believe it's 24 regulatory colleges across the country for nurses. So it is a very complex process to sort out nurse regulation. I'm hopeful that the progress we've seen so far will continue. So, Edward or Andrea, either of you want to add to that?
Joyce, I think we see the same thing reflected in the physician pathway. One of the things about physician licensure is that it is fairly complex. We have a number of different levels of regulation. The significant progress has been also observed in for physicians as well, both at the provincial level with medical regulatory authorities provincially, but also with how specialists in family medicine are recognized and licensed at the national level. So I'm actually very pleased to see the progress, to see the expansion of practice ready assessments. We know, however, as one of my slides mentioned, that one of the critical ways to sort of bridge internationally trained physicians, whether they're here already or they're here working to become licensed, is opportunities to maintain their currency of practice through alternative positions, be they clinical assistants, for example, in the workplace, but also opportunities to gap some of the fairly short educational shortcomings that they may have that can be gapped through a clinical bridging program. So, bridging programs are something that are currently not in place for physicians, except for in Manitoba, where they had a short bridging style program for internationally trained physicians. I believe that it is back up and running. But the other provinces don't have such opportunities. So really creating that sort of ramp up into licensure for physicians does what we see happening in the IEN environment, which is to create opportunities for them to enter into a clinical environment and learn as they offer support to the existing system.
Thank you so much, Andrea and Joyce. And we have time for one more question. And this one is, if you had to pick one of the most impactful changes to have internationally educated health professionals optimally employed, which of your recommendations would you choose and why? And we have about 30 seconds if each of you would like to provide a response.
I think I already gave my answer in my previous response. So it would be really focusing on opportunities for maintenance or getting back into a currency of practice opportunity. And that could include bridging programs for physicians.
I would echo the same thing for nurses. I think it's important that they be given opportunities to do their practice here in Canada, as opposed to sending them back home to earn their recent practice. I don't think that that will be helping them too much, if we want them to transition effectively into our healthcare system. Thank
And the
you.
reality is that the process here does take some time. So currency of practice slides for reasons sometimes outside of the control of the immigrants themselves. So, that balance of having information before you immigrate so you can look at those requirements and plan accordingly, that's really important. It's also really important to understand how long things may take once you get to Canada. And then to have opportunities here to have a stepwise entry into their profession is really helpful. We know that the evidence shows us that. We know that from bridging programs for internationally educated health professionals and other health professions. We've seen that with IENs, those who have had access to bridging programs have had great success. So it is a policy or an initiative or an approach that has evidence to support it. Bridging programs help people understand the Canadian way of practice. It helps individuals prepare for their practice exams. It gives them an opportunity to wrap their heads around local terminology. Even when they're fluent in English, there's an issue around terminology and how medical terminology certainly can differ across English-speaking countries. So It is an efficient way of integrating internationally educated health professionals. And I think it could work for physicians as well as we know it works well for IDNs as well.
Great. Thank you so much, Edward and Andrea, for those insights. And I would just like to thank you all for joining us today and being part of this important work and discussion. And I'd like to express my sincere appreciation to our working group, IEN, and both ITP co-chairs, Joyce, Andrea, and Edward. Thank you so much for your leadership, collaboration, and dedication to guiding this work. And as well, I'd like to give a big thank you to the N4 team for all the behind-the-scenes support and coordination that have supported this work. And also, thank you to all of you in the audience for your time and your engagement today. Whether you're a policymaker, service provider, an internationally educated health professional, your participation is helping to move this important work forward. We hope that today's session provided you with useful insights and sparked new ideas for your practice, programming, or advocacy that you're currently doing. And as we mentioned, the progress reports can be accessed on newcomernavigation.ca. N4 is sunsetting, and we will include messaging of where our products are going. But Sahar spoke to where some of those products will end up quite well. So thank you all today. And I'll just flip it over to our panelists, Sahar, Andrea, Joyce, Edward, any final remarks as we
I
wrap up?
have a final remark for sure, and it's going to echo my slides. It's really the acknowledgement of the working group members. One of the things that N4 has succeeded so well in doing is bringing together stakeholders from different levels of influence in the system, from regulatory authorities to associations to fairness offices to PRA practice ready assessment administrators to advocacy groups for internationally trained physicians. So I just really want to acknowledge the time and the effort of members of the working groups and also how they took back that information to their organization and utilized their increased awareness of the issues around internationally trained healthcare professionals into their organizations. And so I think that has been a great accomplishment by the N4 team to bring those people together, but also recognizing that without the participation of those stakeholders, we could not have spread the news and mobilized the knowledge in the way that N4 has. So thank you to all of those organizations involved. Thanks so much, Mariah and Zahar.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all. Take care, and
Thank you.
hopefully,
Thank
we
you,
will
everybody.
connect again soon.
Thank you.